session number 10764, Reel 1.
Mr. Nye, Reel 1, which year did you join the Navy and why did you join?
1936. I came over from India in the May, and unknown to me, my parents were going to go back, and we were going to be left here to go to school because I was a scholar at the time, you see. And I stayed at my aunt's place, which I didn't like very much, in Ashford, Kent, because it was out in a village in a place called Sellinge. And they were farm laborers at the time. So I decided I wanted to get out. And I didn't want to go to the schools here. So I went down to Chatham with a friend of mine, on the back of his motorbike, actually. And I just joined up, only to be told that I was too young and too old at the time. So I said, well, I have no alternative but to get into the Navy before the end of August, I said, because my parents are going back to India. So they then sent me down to Chatham Barracks, and I had my medical, and I was accepted. And within 10 days of that medical inspection, I was in the Navy. And that was the reason I joined. I tried the Air Force before that, but they said I was too young to join.
Where were you trained?
In St. Vincent. HMS St. Vincent, Gosport.
Can you describe what the training was like on St. Vincent?
Blue murder, to be honest. Very harsh.
In what way?
Well, it was for a young man like me that had been used to a very soft life in India. To arrive in a naval training depot or establishment, things became really hard because one had to do one's own washing, and the instructors weren't all that kind to us people. They were very cruel. They used to walk around with what they used to call a stonicky, which was a piece of rope with a big knot on the end of it, and we used to get caned quite a bit with this.
What was it called?
It was a stonicky, they used to call it. And also, if you did anything wrong on the parade ground, if your rifle drill was not quite accurate as they wanted you to do it, the next thing you found yourself was climbing up the mast. So it was rather harsh. Not like probably today. It's a lot easier, I should think. But it was very, very hard in those days because I tried to get out. I'd had a month of it, and I heard that in the first month there's a new entry. One can ask for one's release, but I was told by the divisional officer of mine at the time that I'd be far better off serving the Navy.
So you changed your mind, did you?
Changed my mind, yes.
Were there any of the boys who couldn't take it?
Oh, yes, we had three of them leave out of my class of 16, yeah. But they were really soft kids, I reckon, because I was trained in a military school. So having a military background in school in India, I was quite able to take some of the harshness because it couldn't have been much harder than what I had as a kid.
Do you think that the training that you had at St. Vincent was useful to you for later on?
Very useful indeed, yes. As I've always said, whenever been asked this question, I've always said that training I had made a man of me. To have gone through the war and survived the war, that it must have really helped, even though it was very, very hard. It did help me.
Do you feel that the harshness was necessary?
I didn't at the time, but when looking back in hindsight, I would say so, yes. Because it disciplined one to face all kind of eventualities. You know, and there were some that came during the war that I wasn't expecting.
Well, how long was your training at St. Vincent?
I was on what they call general course, which is a 9-month training period, 9 to 12 months.
What other courses were there?
There was an AC advanced class, which did 18 months.
AC?
An AC advanced class, which was an 18-month course. If you were clever enough, you say, you had to work yourself into either the GC or the AC. So when I found that things were a bit rough at St. Vincent, I decided I would do the GC course, which would only give me a shorter spell of time in the establishment, you see, and I could get to sea a lot quicker. I didn't want to do 18 months there.
So what kind of duties did you take up in the Navy? Were you a specialist on anything or a seaman?
I was a seaman. I joined up as a boy seaman, went to the warspite in Portsmouth, joined her there. That would be about 37, yes.
You were telling me earlier that it was on the warspite that you had something to do with the Spanish Civil War.
That's right, we were out there, when the Spanish Civil War broke out, we were on patrol duty out there at the time. And it was just a question of making sure that British shipping wasn't hampered in any way.
Were there any incidents that stick out in your mind from the Spanish Civil War?
Well, one incident I recall, it was in Barcelona, where we were put ashore, about 8 of us, put ashore to guard the British embassy there, or the British consul, one or two, I can't remember which one. And a lot of the civilians at that particular time were trying to leave. You know, the mostly women and children were taken on board ships anyway, the destroyers that used to operate between the Spanish ports and Marseilles, for instance. But this particular one I remember was because I was on guard duty. And nobody was allowed to throw any of the food, leftovers, was not allowed to be thrown away. And they used to literally put a guard on dustbins full of leftovers. And when you've got a screaming mob of about 100, 150 women and children coming down to a road to scavenge these dustbins, you know, you're supposed to be able to stop them. Well, how could one stop people that are starving hungry? That's something that probably sticks in my mind.
So what do you do? Just let them take it?
You had no option, really, but to let them take it.
Were they fighting each other for the food?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, I remember a destroyer. They were tied up alongside a wall in one of the ports we were in. And a similar thing took place. They just raided the dustbins, and there was two or three blokes there with fully armed rifle and bayonet. They couldn't stop them. You couldn't stop people who were starving.
Was there any bombing of Barcelona
Oh, yes. There were a few air raids in Barcelona. Too true. Yes.
Did you have any interest in the political side of what was going on in the Spanish Civil War?
I wasn't politically minded at all. All I hoped that would be over quick. Didn't matter to me which side won. But I know that we had a lot of naval ratings that did leave their ships in Gib, crossed over the border to La Linea and joined up with the Republican forces.
Did you know of any personally?
Well, not personally, but this was a well-known fact that a lot of them used to join up with the Republicans. Because there was an international brigade, you know, that was fighting against Franco, and quite a lot of the boys left to join them.
Did you see anything of the Spanish ships?
Not really. I didn't see a great deal of them around anywhere, because I think they kept clear. But I did. The amazing thing is that how things happen in your life, I remember being in Gibraltar after we'd taken some of these poor unfortunate refugees up to Marseilles and put them ashore there. We came back to Gib, and the Scharnhorst was there, believe it or not, and the guys now. And I remember going aboard this ship, only to be confronting it again in 1943 in the battle.
What was the relationship between German sailors and British sailors?
Quite friendly at that time, very friendly. Because we were all out there more or less doing a similar sort of job, even though they were the Republican Army's adversaries.
What was it like living aboard a big ship like the Warspite?
Chaotic, I would think. But well disciplined, but a bit chaotic, because you'd never got to know all the ship's company. We're talking about something like 2,500 men and officers and men, and it's very difficult. You remember most of the people that served with you, they were in your mess or in the seamen's messes, but you didn't get to know the communications or the engineering staff at all.
Was it a comfortable ship to be on?
No warship in those days was comfortable. Not really, because it was all sleeping in hammocks and it was like cattle. Whereas today they have a lot more comforts than they had in those days.
But was a big ship more comfortable than a small ship to be on?
Yes, I would say so. Destroyers were very uncomfortable, because that's what I, in the latter part of my life in the Navy, that's what I had done, was on destroyers. Most of the service I'd done was on destroyers during the war.
Do you get less seasickness on a battleship than on a destroyer?
Well, I don't know. I've never been seasick, so I wouldn't really know. I have seen men on destroyers, in particular one that I can recall on HMS Martin, my name is Donald Cook, that was so ill on one of our Russian trips that he was praying to die. He just wouldn't get up for action stations or anything, poor devil. You know, one had to feel really sorry for him. And eventually when we got back to Skaparov, our first convoy, he was put ashore. And we heard that he later joined the Army.
So somebody like that would be useless for the Navy?
No good at all. If he was perpetually sick, every time we went out. There used to be a lot of seasickness, but, you know, I fortunately was not one of them. I've never known what it is to be seasick. I've seen them.
What was the food like aboard the Warspite?
Well, it's what was known as general messing in those days, which the paymaster dealt with the menu. So whatever he decided we would eat, that is what we had. But it was quite good, really. It wasn't bad. It was better than destroyer's food. You didn't have time to eat it for them.
What were you doing when war was declared?
Believe it or not, I was in a place called we left Villefranche in southern France, and then we went from there to San Remo, and we was coming down the Italian coast to go to Naples when we heard that there was a crisis on, and we were ordered back to Malta. And then when we got to Malta, we heard that war would probably be imminent, so we were then shipped over to Alex with the whole, most of the Mediterranean fleet went to Alexandria, and that's where we stayed till actually war was declared. And I remember it very, very distinctly, because a lot of us went ashore that particular night. The non-duty watch went ashore that night, and we really got plastered in Alex, because we didn't know what the hell we were going in for or what was going to happen to us. So we just went on the boat.
Because you were worried?
Was afraid as well, I think, not being in a war, but hearing what my father went through during the 1914-18 war, you know.
Did you, at that time, did you think that the Royal Navy would be able to handle the German Navy?
Without any doubts, yes. It wasn't until the Bismarck and the Tirpitz came on the scene that one began to doubt the possibilities, because they were two very powerful ships. But I think the Navy could have coped with them, and by having far superior numbers in battleships, or even far larger fleet, actually, to cope with that.
How was the Italian fleet regarded?
What a big yellow streak, I would say. There were occasions when they were a force to be reckoned with, but it was very, very limited in their ventures out to sea. I mean, I remember one incident where, this is what I was told by some of the destroyer screen that was covering the Ajax and the Orion, when they were chasing a couple of battleships off of Crete somewhere, where some of the Italian sailors were jumping over the side with their life belts on, and it was quite dark at the time, and they could see these little red lights floating around in the water, and there was a string of these chaps just kept diving off because they were being chased by two cruisers and about four to six destroyers. I mean, this was ridiculous. A battleship taking on two cruisers should have stayed behind and literally wiped them out.
Because they had some powerful ships.
They had a marvellous navy, to be quite honest. You know? But as regards battleships went, we had a far bigger force than they did. But they never ventured out a great deal, really. There were rare occasions when they did come out. I mean, the Toronto affair, for one thing, when the fleet air arm hit that port and they took two battleships out there. They damaged them for at least 6 to 8 months. There was not a fighting force then. There weren't much before that, really. But I don't reckon much on the Italian Navy, no.
How soon after war was declared did you actually get into action?
Well, the first one was a high-level bombing raid, Italian bombing raid on Alex. Then the next time, I think it was when we were covering convoys to Malta from Alex. And then there was this Battle of Matapan, which was a night action.
Let's talk about the Battle of Matapan, and can you tell me what you remember about it personally?
Well, it was an action that didn't really last long, because when we saw these ships, when the star shells went over them, they all appeared to be completely unaware that we were around. The guns were all trained fore and aft, these three cruisers, and they just wasn't prepared. I don't think they even realized we were in the vicinity. It wasn't long before all three of them were put below. You know, it was no action really as an action. It probably went down the battle, but I don't think the battle really lasted long. It wasn't something like the Bismarck, where you were chasing this thing all over the Atlantic Ocean. But we had a powerful fleet at the time to take these three on.
What was your own action station?
It was on a 6-inch gun. I was loading 6-inch batteries. There was four guns, port and starboard side. And I was allocated as a loader to the port gun, the second gun on the port side. And that was my action station.
Did you open fire at Matapan?
Oh, yes, we opened fire. Oh, yes, we had to open fire, yeah.
On your 6-inch?
6-inch, 15-inch, everything went off, yeah. They were sitting ducks, really, you know.
Could you see the target yourself?
Not really, no. because I was in a loading, a gun loading position. You've got the shell, which is 100 pounds in weight, and the nose is on the crook of your forearm, and the base of it is held in your other hand. And you're pushing these things onto the gun loading tray before you ram it home. It wasn't automatic type guns. Those 6-inch batteries wasn't in those days. So it was hard work. But as I say, fortunately, it didn't take long.
Where did the shells come up from?
They came up through the shell, from the shell room up a hoist onto the batteries. And each battery had its own hoist where the cordite cases and the shells appeared from. So at each side of the gangways, but at least if you can imagine a gangway going down on each side of the ship, and the shell hoist was in that next to the gangway, and it was a question of being passed over by the people who were assisting in the men on the batteries. The shells were passed over to us, and it was a question of us taking them on. But there was always, in the gun casement itself, there was always quite a number of shells and cordite cases there ready for you to use. It was a case of having to have it ready all the time.
Did the work on the occasion of Matapan, did the work go smoothly, or were there any hitches?
Not to my recollection. Everything went according to plan, really. It was the one of the easiest battles I think I'd ever been in. I wasn't really afraid. Not like I was when we met the Shah most.
Was there any incoming fire from the Italians at Matapan?
If there was, it was very spasmodic, and I didn't see it. I didn't see it because, as I say, in a casemate, you don't see a thing from there. Well, like talking about the Shahnos, there was the HA director up there. I could see everything that was going on. And that's when you really are afraid.
At Matapan, did you take Italians on board?
We took prisoners, yes. Mostly off the Pola.
Can you describe that? You were telling me about it earlier, if you can repeat it.
Well, the abandoned ship, she didn't sink. The Fiume and the Zora went down. But this Pola, she stayed afloat. And when the survivors were picked up off the ship, they were three parts drunk. And we found out later on, through people that were interrogating them, that they got back on board knowing full well that the ship wasn't going to sink, but they thought we would be taking them in tow, you see. But we didn't. We took them off. And then finally she was sunk. But they were in no state to fight. A lot of them were drunk.
How was it that you came to miss Narvik? Because Warspite took an important part of Narvik.
Well, I'd left her, you see, and I came back to Chatham. And I was in Chatham for a while after I had my leave, because don't forget I was out in the Med for over 4 years. I mean, normal commissions in those days was 2.5 years. But I did 4 years out there because of war breaking out. I just couldn't get away because they were recruiting a lot of hostilities only, people that were being trained up quick and being sent out on various ships. So we went, the active service blokes at that particular time found it very difficult to get home again. So I was left out there till I finally got a relief and I came back and went into Chatham Barracks, had my leave, came back from my leave, and then in the May of 1942 I joined HMS Martin, my very first destroyer.
What kind of a ship was she?
One of the happiest ships I've been on. Really was. A first class fighting ship, she was.
Was she a new ship?
Brand new, yeah. We commissioned her in May. No, beg your pardon. March, I think it was, we commissioned her. Sure it was March. Yes, and we joined her in Jarrow. And when I saw her, I saw, you look at a destroyer for the very first time. Well, I've seen other destroyers. The Tribes were a class of destroyers that I really liked because they were beautiful looking ships when they first came out to the Mediterranean as a flotilla. But when I joined the Martin and I looked at this thing, and she looked like a miniature cruiser because she was the first ship or the first destroyers to have gun turrets, 4.7 gun turrets. And there were three of them, two forward, one aft. And she was, to me, a real picture of a ship. Beautiful looking craft she was. Nice sleek lines. And the crew aboard there appeared to me to be probably one of the finest crews I've served with. And
why were they so good?
I don't know, we seemed to knit together so well, you know. Because after we joined her with the ammunition ship, that was the first thing we had to get done. Then when we completely provisioned and ammunitioned, we did our sea trials. And during those sea trials, you build up to a perfection that the fleet would like you to build up to as a fighting ship. And it seemed to be so easy aboard that one. The things seemed to just knit in. There was very few mistakes made where you thought to yourself, well, this one's not going to be an efficient ship, because don't forget I was an active serviceman and I had quite a few, or we had quite a few brand new recruits that were being pulled into the Navy at that time. And we always seem to think a little bit low on these characters, you see, because they weren't active service. They were HOs as far as we're concerned, and they were green as grass, didn't quite know much about the Navy, and it was probably their first ship. So they relied upon us a lot, really, for help, information.